This episode is brought to you by 3Chi. 3Chi, it rhymes, is the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. Delta 8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. Go to 3chi.com, the number 3chi.com, to shop for Delta 8 edibles like cookies and gummies, or to shop for vapes, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make your own homemade edibles. Use code GUNS21, G-U-N-S-21, at checkout and receive 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase.
Some years ago, a crack commando comedy unit were given jobs above their pay grade. These men promptly were put on leave and escaped to an underground podcast stockade in an unknown location. Today, still unwanted by big media, they survive as comics of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and you can find them, you can listen to Guns Blazing.
All right, episode, I think it's like 53, Guns Blazing Podcast, Todd. You know, a lot of times we just open this up like a bunch of dummies talking about dumb stuff, because we are dummies.
It's kind of what we do.
Yeah, it's a lot what we do. But you know what? Today we have a monster special guest, a good friend of mine. This gentleman is one of the nicest dudes on the planet outside of being one of the funniest of all time. All time without even a doubt. I mean, you're out of control human being, and I'm just glad you came. Mr. Gabriel Iglesias on the podcast, kid. The clean dome piece.
Right?
That thing, swag, dude. Look at that shine. That's nice, bro. Looking light over there on your feet. You still losing more weight?
A little bit. I think the angles is what helps. This way, let me tilt this a little bit. Look at that. I just lost another 5 pounds. Want to gain some weight? There you go. Yeah,
there it is. That was the quickest 30 pounds I've ever seen anybody lose.
I was going to say, that's how you catfish someone.
You know, maybe I wonder, is reverse catfish a thing? Now, now tell Todd who we got here.
This is Vinny.
Little Vin.
Oh, Vinny.
Little Vinny right here.
Good little Vin.
What a cute puppy.
Yup.
And this, I'm trying to put him behind. Get behind me.
Okay, this is my partner in crime, Todd McComas here.
Hey, buddy.
You know, we got a little podcast thing. We're just chilling, doing our thing.
You've been doing it 53 times.
Yeah. So,
I think you got the bugs out.
You're looking wonderful. Fluff, what's going on? I mean, everything's opening back up. You're going to San Antonio for a month straight? How many shows?
30 shows in 30 days. Basically, it turned into a residency.
Yeah, it did.
So, you know, we were trying to find the best way to get back out there on the road and feel, I guess, comfortable and safe. And so we wanted to make sure that, you know, when we started to put the thing together, all the social distancing was at the highest level. So you had to make sure that you spaced out the room and you know, you didn't go full capacity. So we thought it'd be a good idea. Let's post up for a week and see how that goes. And, it snowballed, no pun intended, Texas.
So Gabriel, as the hustler of all hustlers, were you finally like, hey, here's a year where I can enjoy myself and just kind of take it easy? Did it feel good, or, you know, how'd you take it?
So, Todd, the first month I was just depressed. I was like, you know, comedy's always been that thing that's been there for me no matter what was going on in my life. Like even when I went to my breakup and when I, you know, fell off the deep end for a minute, I always had the stage as an outlet. I always was able to go up there and vent and just do what I do. And to have that completely taken away, man, it was just like, whoa, I felt like I got canceled. I felt like, what bad joke did I do? And so it really hit me hard that first month. And then I realized, you know what, I've been neglecting myself for a long time in the sense that, you know, I'd always make the excuse, well, I don't have time to go see the doctor. I don't have time to work out. I don't have time to eat right because I'm on the road. I got to go, you know? And so it was one of those things where I didn't have no more excuses. And I got myself a trainer and a nutritionist, and I figured, you know, this is going to go a minute. So, so I started working out and everything. I saw an endocrinologist, a diabetes specialist, and got my sugar under control. I wear a patch now, this little device that basically monitors my sugar level around the clock. So if I eat a Twinkie, an alarm goes off, which I think is the funniest thing. Literally, an alarm goes off.
Is that a Dexcom?
No, it's a, God, I always forget the name of it.
But similar. It's like kind of like the, it's just constantly monitoring you.
Oh, yeah, around the clock. So, you know, it also works if your sugar drops, because I never had that problem, but the medication, I'm eating, you know, and that's the one that really affects you. Like, I can rock 400 on my sugar. I don't even know. But if I'm below 80, I'm hitting walls. I'm stumbling. I'm like, whoa.
Nice. I have an alarm that goes off every time I eat a Twinkie late at night, too. And it comes from the bedroom, and it sounds like, I can hear the rapper.
Hey, you know, I know I'm so much more versed with, like, how diabetes works now because my girl's son's type 1. So it's just around-the-clock action, you know? Yeah, so he has a Dexcom.
Way more hardcore, yeah.
Yeah, he has a Dexcom. And then another kid, an IndyCar driver, Connor Daly, he has the one where Dexcom's on one side and the insulin's on the other, and they just talk to each other and, you know, and just do it. He don't have to do it. It's like hands off. But, well, you know what? Yeah, you know, we're making moves. San Antonio for a month. Now, I know that every time you pick a place, whether it's your special, whether, you know, like there's always a monster significance behind it. Like you really pick it out, you know, like meticulously why you want to go a place, whether it's Hawaii, Bakersfield, El Paso. I mean, so what was it about San Antonio? Was outside of the amazing food?
San Antonio was the first place I got to go to hang out and just get to really feel comedy. It was 1999, I guess. It was the Latino Laugh Festival. Mm-hmm. And so it was the first time I got a chance to be around a lot of comedians. And a lot of comedians of color that were all basically, we all had the same goals. And so to be in the mix with something like that, and everybody's has their ideas and their visions, and to mm-hmm. be in San Antonio and just hanging out for the entire week, it was awesome. You know, it was like, oh, this is like comedy camp. And, you know, San Antonio is, it's, you know, when people talk about San Antonio, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. I mean, you go anywhere and it's just like, wow. And, the food, the people, everything about the city. It's definitely my favorite place to perform outside of home. I mentioned that it's El Paso and San Antonio. Those two tied right there.
Yeah.
Texas.
I still can't get Bart Reed to book me. So I wouldn't know. I've only done the arenas there for 5 to 10,000 with you. I don't really play with the smaller clubs in town, Gabe. So
shout out to Bart Reed if he's listening. Yeah. book Latham already. Come on.
What is it, the same? Is it the theater where you did Valentine's Day? Because I remember the first time I was in San Antonio when you brought me. It was early 2010 and or 11, but I think 10. And I think it was Valentine's Day weekend, and we were at that really nice theater in San Antonio.
No, it was probably the Majestic or the Empire. Or
it, I think it was Majestic.
They have a lot of theaters close to each other. And so I want to say one of them, two of them are literally back to back. I want to say it's the Empire and the Majestic, mm-hmm. I think. But this time around, it's a place called the Tobin Center. The Majestic, the Empire, Tobin Center. This place is very state of the art. It's really, really cool. You want to go online and check out the Tobin Center's YouTube page. The seats, you can configure the room with a computer. And so let's say you want 100 seats on the floor. You basically, like with an iPad, you configure how you want it. And the floor opens up and seats come out of the floor, and then they position themselves however you want.
Wow.
It's freaking gnarly. It's I've never seen anything like that. And they have a really amazing filtration system, which is also a reason why we wanted to go there. So all the air just gets sucked up. You can basically, they did a test where they filled the room with smoke. And they completely cleared the room of smoke within 10 minutes with the filtration system. So it's pretty badass. It's like I said, it's state of the art. And we chose it because we could configure the room and the air is going to be great.
That's going to be the future, right? I mean, everyone's going to gravitate toward that.
Mm-hmm. But
how many seats?
I love the city. I love the city. And it's always had a special place in my heart. And even when I did Houston with the Toyota Center, they, you know, San Antonio got butthurt and they're like, hey, hey. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Just
Houston, you know. Houston right there. Houston. Oh, wait, what do you guys know about that?
That's right. Oh,
that was
Patron night. Patron when with the Mexican homies that were all tattoo artists that rolled up with all the Bud Lights. After you were about a good half bottle in doing a meet and greet.
Oh, my God.
By the way, Fluffy don't drink very often, but when he does, I'm telling you guys, look out, bro. You're going to get yourself into some shit. Man, these dudes get run over.
He's shaking his head. He's like, oh, God, if you only knew.
I know. And, yeah, that was the night. I was like my breaking in. Like, that was like my me getting jumped in kind of thing.
Yeah, that tattoo was no, I mean, with the whole headdress on the girl, it's a badass tat.
I mean, it's still going strong, dude. Hold on, get in there, bro.
Look at that.
I added a bunch, but you know, no, that was like a four. We were there until like 6 a.m, just drinking beers, chilling out. Two of us getting tats, me and El Katrine Quaylar.
Those guys didn't know what they were in for. They're like, no, we thought we'd do a name or something. We didn't know we're going to be here for 2 days.
I think those dudes would have stayed there until two more days. No problem. Fluffy and they're chilling.
I was contemplating getting a tattoo of the Patron bottle on my back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's where I was at. And fortunately, the guys talked me out of it. And, you know, when we saw the sun coming up, we're like, yeah, we ain't going for round two.
Oh man, that shit is hilarious.
That's the closest I've come to getting a tattoo was that night.
I bet.
That was a wild introduction.
A lot of tattoos. Our buddy Ivan, he is a diehard Raider fan, and we got him one of the baddest Raider tattoos in Denver, which we found hysterical. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, that's where you got it.
Yeah, in Denver. That was a wild. You know what else? Houston, there was always some wild shit happening when we got there. Like whenever you decided just to do the club instead of do the fucking arena, I think you gave the night to James Harden one time, and we just went over to the Improv, and that was the time that was their last. You did their last night ever.
That was so much fun. I mean, that club itself was badass. It didn't look like any other Improv, and the green room was downstairs. There was a whole flight of stairs that you had to take to get to the backstage, and then a long hallway and the. It was just it was completely different from any of the other clubs. I think it's because it was designed to be a different club. It was called Spellbinders, and the Improv bought it and took it over. But yeah, we were there the last day. I remember as soon as we finished the show, people started breaking shit.
We were all downstairs, bro. Yeah. And like 20 people have bats, chairs, golf clubs, bro. And we're all like, oh, well, like if we could, out of nowhere, it was one of the most chaotic rooms I've ever been in because it felt like there was just like, it was lawlessness. People, I mean, I remember I grabbed a bat, bro, and I'm just beating it fucking drywall. Boom! We're all hammered, just busting up like 20 people from the staff. Everybody kind of slows down, right? And I get one more in. And right as I'm doing it, Lala Titi walks in, who's like the general manager booker of the whole operation. And I'm just like this, just fucking full swing, going home run mode. He's like, what the fuck are you doing, Latham? And I'm like, I'm the only one who gets popped right now. And there's 30 people down here just beating the piss out of this place.
It was like first practice.
Yeah. And then I think we went to, what's the place you always go to in Houston with all the big ass, with the big ass plates?
Oh, well, wait. I got to finish the story. I took... you know the paper towels, the dispenser?
Oh, yes. It was on the bus for like 2 years.
I figured, you know, what the hell? They're going to demolish this place anyways. So I took the paper towel dispenser off the wall. And my plan was to have it installed on the bus so that we could just do this thing with good paper towels.
The first part executed fully. The first part was executed fully. And then, sorry, guys.
Quiet down.
Delivery guy just rolled up. And then the second half, the thing just kind of sat underneath in one of the bays for a while, probably next to the 45-pound dumbbells that we used one time.
One time, yeah. I got inspired to take weights on the road, and basically just made the gas more expensive.
We had a full weight set, bro. I remember one time, you weren't even there. You flew home. It was just the Misfits on a Tuesday, and we were at the hotel out kind of Kansas City, and then we unloaded the weights, all the weights. It looked like a prison weight room right here out in the parking lot of like a fucking Homestead Inn or whatever. And we had a grill and the weights and Martine, who with a white, just with the wife beater on, looks like he's in jail.
Yeah, he looks like, he looks like the baddest dude on the block in the prison yard. Yeah.
We looked like a unit on the yard. It really, because everybody was just wearing their tank tops, bro. And everybody just looked like we get all the tats, all that shit. Dude, it was so much fun. Though we sat there and made ribs or some shit.
Oh my God. All the things that I missed when I flew home. You know, going home trying to work on this family thing that didn't work out, but hey.
Oh man, I was thinking of questions. What's that?
I said you guys were getting your swole on and your rib on.
Yeah,
right.
Mostly rib though, mostly ribs. One of my questions was, when you get to a level like when you're just so monstrous of a brand and just an act where you can just go anywhere on the planet and just crush five, I mean, minimum. I mean, the small end now is 5,000. Does that make, I mean, how does that bleed into like your regular life? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, we hung out for so many years, day and night, but it was also when we hung out, we, you know, that wasn't the part when you were alone or that you're just doing your own, when you're completely away from it. Does it dull your regular life down too much, do you think? Is the highs too fucking high?
Well, I used to have a joke about how, you know, on stage, I'd walk out to the, and then I'd come home to take out the trash. it's full. I'm like, but you don't understand. People were chanting, you know, they're like, feet, blah, feet. Like, take out the trash.
Oh shit, that is wild. Those high. You know what I always love?
Very different, you know. It's like the high is incredibly high. It's right there with a drug. I mean, you know, it's euphoric, you know, that many people just going crazy for you. And then you go home and you're trying to regroup, and it's just, it's night and day. And, you know, you have to appreciate each thing, you know, the crowd and the shows, but you got to also appreciate the normal too, and enjoy just trying to be regular dude when you're at home. But yeah, it was very, very, like, it was a culture shock every week. It was just like a reset.
Yeah. Cause I always knew, like, obviously, you know, we do this to get to that, you know, to get to that level. Like that's all of our dream, you know? And then, but you know, I always wondered, you know, I've made it whatever, how we've made it along our way, you know, we've done our thing, but you know, after just watching, like I would get you every single time. I always wanted to be out in the crowd when you came out. Like I was either loved being right next to you, like right behind you, getting some kind of cool picture where, you know, of you just rolling out or just being in the crowd in the back, because the energy was like nothing I've ever felt. And you get chills every single time. 700 show, 700th arena, you're out in the crowd, the chills pop up, you know? So especially in Europe, how much fun do you enjoy Europe? And do you plan on going back after this shit? Because remember when they would all stomp down at the same time, instead of us, how we all clap different?
Yeah,
like at different times.
In the stand, it sounds like a soccer game. The people start thumping the ground, and the it's like a roar. I can't even explain it. It's like a stampede. It sounds like a stampede in the building because everybody's just stomping their feet. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And you can hear it. You can hear it throughout the entire building outside. I mean, it's awesome. Going to Europe is that's what I meant to say about that was a culture shock for me, because I'm like, oh shoot, you know, I remember getting called American and it didn't sound nice
when they- yeah.
You know, I had to leave America to be American.
Oh shit. I know that was like a military operation. We had like 30 military bags of merch and we rolled it off train to bus to plane. I mean,
I got to send you some of those pictures. Yeah, I got pictures of all that. It was pretty awesome. They have a whole different level of appreciation for you as an artist. And, you know, I definitely can't wait to go back. It's like, you know, it's like these shows, but on crack, because they're just super fanatical.
Yeah.
Super, like, you know, they wait for you. Like they wait for you over there. It's insane.
when you get to the point when you can tour like that, Gabriel, like when you first set up that first big tour, is the coolest part of that being able to build your road family, like Sean and Martine and these people that you love, and to be able to take them with you?
I was trying to just hang out with people that I got along with. I wanted to make sure that, you know, doesn't matter how funny you are, I got to live with you.
Yeah, right. Because yeah. they showed so much love as openers. But the moment that fucking the lights went down and the music started, I'm just a dude doing balloon animals, really, at the end of the day, like at Chevy's before the fajitas.
You know, we had so many people on that tour bus, and I had no idea. You know, it's like, who teaches you how to tour and how to live on a bus and how many people to have and how many people not to have? And then, you know, as years go by, I start learning about other tours and seeing how other people do it. And I'm like, oh, wow, I really went hard, didn't I?
yeah, you did.
For example, Kevin Hart has like, five openers, four or five openers. Mm-hmm. I went to go watch his the filming of his special in Philadelphia. And it's just like another one. I'm like, how many goddamn openers does he have? And then I remembered, I'm like, oh shit, I had five openers.
You know? And granted, how much time did his openers do though?
Each guy would do like 15 minutes.
Okay, that's a lot though.
That's a long.
Your show was way tighter.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, at one point it was you, Martine, Alfred, Rick, G. Riley.
Yeah,
you know,
those five of us. Ooh. And then we would do the merch commercial,
yes,
which was honestly one of the best things ever. Like that shit got because I didn't get to, you know, when you have no ability to be, I mean, as an opener, like you think you can, you know, work on new material and shit in front of 5,000 people. It's a mind fuck, you know, because you're like, I'm going to go up here and you know, I got my 8 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes. Like I'm thinking I'm going to throw a new bit in. Fuck out of here. I mean, I didn't have the balls to do that. One time you made me do it though in San Francisco. One of the first nights I went up, one of the first month of the tour, 2010, Todd, we go to fucking San Francisco. We're at this Chinese place eating. That's unbelievable. And then you were like, hey, you can go up tonight, but you can't do anything you've ever done. And it was at that amazing ass Round Theater. What was the name of that place in San Francisco? It's unbelievable.
Oh shoot!
I forgot the name of it, but it was
Santa Rosa. Because I remember there was that theater that George Carlin did a couple specials at. That just it was a really big thrust round stage in the front.
Yes, that was it. And I went up there, dude. And I wrote like you made. I was so like you. That was one of the biggest challenges in my comedy life, because that was at least 3,000 to 5,000 people. And I was. He's like, yeah, you can go up tonight, but you can't do any material you've ever done.
I love it.
No pressure. Yeah,
I was writing jokes with the Chinese spot stuff in San Francisco.
Was that the same weekend that somebody had brought space cake?
What's space cake?
Space cake. It's basically it's THC infused cake. It's like
nice.
It's a big ass edible.
Is that the one you were down for 2 days? the next day.
So you know, people always bring cakes to the shows. And this is when I was eating the cakes. Like now, like, you know, you don't know what people are up to. So it's,
right.
Unless the thing is like double wrapped and you know, you got the store label and everything, and you can tell no one's messed with it. I really don't mess with the cakes. But someone had brought this chocolate log cake. It was beautiful. It looked like what is it? Like one of them Suzy Q's or
yeah, like Swiss cake rolls.
Yes. So yeah. It was big. And I was on the bus and I'm like, oh, man. And I freaking cut into it and I started eating it and it was delicious. Well, I wound up eating about half of the cake. And when Martine got on the bus, he goes, who ate the cake? And I go, yeah, I did. He goes, you ate all of that? And I go, yeah, why? And he just started laughing and he goes, that's space cake. And I go, well, yeah, it's out of this world. And Todd, let me tell you something, man, there are 2 days missing from my life. Because I remember that we went to, I have like this it felt like a dream that we went to some amazing Chinese restaurant and I was still high the next day.
Yeah. That's probably why you come up with the idea to make me go up there and fucking raw dog it with some new shit on him.
I still had to perform and I don't know how I got through that set.
Wow.
I never seen anybody wake up that lit the next day, because it was like, you know, after we, you know, after the show, you decompress, you get some food, you eat a half a weed cake, we just hang out for a little bit. You know, you're not in bed back of that bus till 3 something maybe. So, you know, you'd wake up in the early afternoon. You were lit.
Can you imagine how much THC he consumed, though? He ate half a fucking space cake.
Joe Diaz calls that a Tuesday.
Yeah, he does. Oh, man. That was a very distinct. That was a very distinct memory, because, you know, you're not like the rest of us are all stoners. And you're not. And then you ate that cake and you were down for the count the next day.
I remember having a really bad anxiety attack because of it, and sitting in front of the bus with the window open and just kind of looking out, taking deep breaths, sounding like a pregnant chick. it was bad. It was bad.
When does San Antonio start?
We start next month on the, I want to say the 23rd.
Okay.
And all the way through through the next month.
A full month straight, 30 days. San Antonio is going to be electric, man, for a month over there.
Because
people getting back out barely, you know what I mean? Just really, you haven't done anything. Some people squeeze a lot of things.
By the way, Texas and Florida, they're leading the charge. They're like, hey, you can leave your mask. Yeah. Like, no, it's a tough one. I'm gonna
I know, we're all vaxxed up, kid. I'm over here. I'm vaxxed up. Got that double shot Moderna squad. You know what I mean?
Nice. I got the Pfizer one.
Nice.
You know, after being off the stage for over a year, I want to say coming up on 15 months now.
Damn.
15 months. I'm just excited to be doing it, and I agreed to it. Don't get me wrong. It's not every single day. We're doubling up shows on Fridays and Saturdays, and so I'm taking Mondays and Tuesdays off. So at least there's a couple of days there. But I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving San Antonio. Or normally I would jump on a plane and come back home. So the plan is to stay out there the entire time, and we're renting a house and like a real world Mexico style.
Nice.
Everybody just bunking up and stuff. But I'm looking forward to it, and I'm not looking at it like, oh my God, that's going to be a lot of work. I'm looking at it like, wow, I get to hang out for a month somewhere. For the cities.
Have you been like knocking the rust off, like getting in comedy shape somewhere? You've been going to some clubs and working stuff out, or?
I very much wanted to go up on stage and just start hitting the clubs again. But, you know, I just didn't know. I didn't feel comfortable yet.
Yeah.
My buddy Alfred Robles got me to crash his show about a week ago. And I went up on stage at the Brea Improv. He did the Brea Improv. And I went out there and it felt weird. I was like, holy smoke. It's been a long time since I'd been in a club. And I did 15 minutes. And it felt really good. It felt like, wow. And I didn't even do the material I was doing. I don't even remember it. I got to go back and watch tapes. I was just talking about, you know, how I felt and what I've been doing for the last year. And it went over pretty good.
Well, if you want my Netflix password to look at all your materials, let me know. It's
about
9 hours of stuff you can pop in on. You're about to do another special. Wait, now, San Antonio. Is that basically a mean run for the new material to special? Because you're going to do minimum 2 hours a night. So at, you know, minimum 60 hours of stand-up, and you probably might even do more than that some nights. So, I mean, you get to do 60 plus hours over that month. Is that where you're going
to? I'm basically going to work out, you know. And people are telling me, who does that? Who stops comedy for a year and then comes back? And then in 30 days, I'm going to shoot a special. I'm like, you know, Netflix is only giving me so long to
keep that front menu popping with your stuff, man.
Yeah, I just think I'm going to be so excited to perform. And it's one of the things I've missed it so much. So, yeah, I'm going to come out, just swinging and just try to build this set in 30 days. And that's why I'm going to have some friends working with me to, you know, go over the material after the shows and just listen. I never like going and listening to, you know, audio. It's like, it's work. And I don't like the work.
Yeah.
But I got to do it if I want to be successful with it, because I don't want to put out a half-ass special. So,
Yeah. Well, that's how you come back hard, though. And, you know, you got your guys are going to be taking, like, notes on something, because you'll say a ton of shit you've never said before.
And
you know, listening to it all back. Exactly.
I see some of these guys, the, you know, the, I guess the workaholic comics, you know, like Gary Goldman. I remember, you know, when I go to club weekend, it's kind of my vacation too, right? Like, so I like to hang out with the other comics and just have a good time, whatever. And I remember, like, I would see him year after year, and he would come in from after the first show, and he would sit in the green room, and he was listening to his set because he was working on that new hour, you know. And he would sit there, and he'd be like taking notes or whatever all the way up until time to go out for the second show. And then he would go out and he would do the bit a different way, or he would, you know, he would rearrange it and change things. And I was like, that looks so much like a job right now, Gary. Like, do you even enjoy the weekend or whatever? And he was like, I enjoy this. He's like, I love doing this. This is what a comedy weekend is to me. This is when I'm on the road versus when I'm back, you know, at the Comedy Cellar performing four shows a night during the week. So it's so cool to see people with different processes. But see, you were never like one of those guys, right? You're like, I'll work it out on stage.
Yeah, everybody has a different process, and I've never liked writing stuff out. I've never liked sitting. Let me do this. I don't know if it's funny until I go up in front of the crowd, and then if they laugh, they laugh. If they don't laugh, and I think that there's something there, I'll try adjusting it the next night. Whether I say it slower, add a voice to it, put some type of just, you know, a little bit of spice if I think there's something there, I can find a way to pull the funny out of it. I just got to tweak it. But I can't, you know, sit and write. I've never had it in me to, all right, let me try this.
Yeah.
And that's been since school. I always, you know, struggle with that back in school. Not saying I'm illiterate or anything.
But that's just not how you do either. I write my stuff out, but, you know, I'm not writing out every word and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the mess with me is whenever I would do like a Tonight Show, they always put your jokes on cue cards, or at least your whatever the topics you're going to cover. And so you're trying to do your thing, but then there's the guy right there, and he's like, you know, so you're like,
I'll do that bit in a second. Calm down, buddy. No, one of my favorite moments though, the entire time we worked together, it was a very like, it wasn't a bright lights type of memory. It was just something that hit me hard. And that was like, I was feeling very confident in like my jokes. And I felt like I was coming along, you know, and I'm like, all right, you know, after this many years, I'm finally getting a little bit of action here, and things are not, you know, I'm on tour with you and I'm feeling good about my jokes. And we were in Maui, I think. And I don't remember how it was, but it was me and you hanging out in your hotel room. And I don't know if it was like a nightcap type thing. Like,
where's this going?
And we ended up talking about my set. And you told me, he's like, well, one of your things is that it's too generic. It's like you're just talking about a topic and it's nothing personal. Like, you have to be way more personal. It has to be about you. And you said like, I had the joke about the Cougars at the time, where I'd go over to their house, you know, bust the door open, all that shit, right? And her son would come pick me up. But you did the way I did it was like me explaining how cougars work. But when you did it, it was like you were living the story, or it was a television show of your life. And you go, well, I was, because, you know, obviously you've heard all of our jokes 55 times, and you did my joke, but you did it like the way you would do it, almost like my shit. And I remember like listening, I was trying to hear it all, because it was 50 times funnier than the bit I had ever done. Like, I've been doing this bit for 7 years, and it was trashed right then and there. You had taken it and you were like, this is how you got to make something like that personal. And you personalized it. And you were like, that's what you got to do to your jokes. And I was just like, I remember sitting there.
Light
like,
bulb. Boom.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, man, my whole set is trash. And he just off the whim just explained why my joke is trash, even though it gets laughs. But just the way I'm portraying it, or, you know, presenting it, and how much better it could be. It was awesome. That was one of my favorite things that ever happened, by the way.
I think with you, Sean, we would always give you shit about it. We're like, dude, you're funnier off stage because you're being yourself. Yep. Your personality, just the way you carry yourself is it's like, that's what you need to do. That's what you needed to bring to the show. That's why I like watching when you're doing your $20 chef, man. I'm like, that's just him being him. And that's entertaining as shit right there. It doesn't matter what you're talking about, because your personality carries the entire thing. I know my jokes don't fly on paper. You look at it and you're like, what is this shit? You know, it's not until you put the personality on it that you're like,
yeah,
it works. trying to find your voice. That's always been the struggle for everyone. Like, okay, what is my voice? Or as Jaime Masada would say, what is your point of view, buddy? that's my best Jaime Masada. That and, you know, hey, La Factory is now open. Please, come to my club.
Oh, man.
I'll use this clip. Watch.
when do you plan on doing this special?
On the 30th day.
Oh, really?
Oh, so you're bringing the whole crew, film the whole thing?
Yes. And so the cool part is that the guy who designed the set, Bruce, he's designed all the sets for the specials. He's going to build the set for the special, and he's going to drop it off on the first day. So I'm going to have a whole month of having this really amazing set. Cause usually you only have it for the one night for the taping of the special, and then it's gone. But this time around, I get to, you know, use it for 30 days. So I think that's pretty cool. I'm excited about that. And then, they come in and they tape the last two shows.
Nice.
Just be like your own damn theater comedy.
I got to crank it out and be ready. So I gotta sit and do my homework and I hate it.
All right, boys, what did I say funny last night? Let's go over it. Those Starbucks runs. So is the main thing, is that what the pressure is? That has to feel good though, right? Like that's like, you're a dude that loves that type of shit. Like you, everything you do, you just, any kind of moment that somebody could, the best possible reason, thing would be you shine in that moment. You always do that. So is it because you like that pressure so much and then boom, it just pops off after you rip 28 shows?
I think all the pressure comes from shitty planning on my part.
That last minute scramble.
It's like, oh God. Yeah. It's a typical kid that had all week to do his homework. And then he waits till the last night. And you're like, fuck. All right, let's do it.
That's going to be part of the drag of making it, is when you're contractually obligated now by someone big, a streaming platform or somebody, to crank out a new one every year. Man, because the rest of us are like, we'll get around to a new hour in 3, 4, 5 years, you know, just a casual pace. To have to do it every year and then bang it out because, boom, you're fluffy and, you know, zillions of people are going to watch this every year. Like, it's got to be a lot of pressure, even though you're as good as you are.
That is the pressure. And I'm also the... I'll put this one out there. I'm the only comic that has to deliver a 90-minute special.
Because they've all been like that, right?
Yeah, they've all been 90-minute specials. And so contractually, I got to deliver a 90-minute special.
Oh,
I never even thought about that. Wow. Yeah, so
they found a way to get a free special in there somewhere.
Yeah, there's a fucking buy two, get three free special.
That's the deal right there.
Specials right there. Now, do you think that you could go to the Netflix office and say, hey, listen, why don't you start a not so special? Because I have a handful of guys that would really crush it and that they're not that special. And I could be on that. You know, like I could be in the not very special special.
The not so special special.
The lower your standards at, you know, an evening at lower your standards. You know, I always wondered, because when we would stop, right, you would just say, hey, like we would get to Dallas early. I remember one of the most electric shows of all time, you know, because the electricity jumps when people get an accidental spot. They accidentally get to your show. So we would be somewhere, right? And there's, what was that? That 5 or 10,000 seater in Dallas that we always started at the beginning in 2010. And one of the first meet and greets that was like 4 hours because 5,000 or 6,000 people waited.
Okay. I think that was American Airlines Arena.
Okay.
It had to have been that venue.
But the night
before the Mavericks play.
Yeah. And the night before, because I remember that meet and greet sticks out more than a lot of them, because it was one of the first ones where I think 4,090 people late waited out of the 5,000. 4,900.
Wow.
But that was the longest meet and greet line in history. It was unbelievable, bro. But,
I had no idea how
they were all staying.
Well, the fans staying, I mean, that was awesome for me, but I didn't realize how upset I was making everybody else that had to stay late. Well, you know, the people that worked the venues, and then come to find out I was fined a couple times. So you get fined a couple times, you'll learn to leave as soon as your show's over.
But you know what else is awesome though? When you knew after a while, like you were going to catch a fine on certain nights, because, you know, you obviously some of these theaters, they're hardos and they're like, we got to be out of here at 12:01 a.m. on the dot or it's $10,000 fine. And then Fluffy be like, listen, man, I got like 30 minutes to go. They said for every half hour I go over, it's 10 grand. Let's do an extra hour. And then motherfucking place goes crazy because you're just paying. He's paying the crowd at this point to do the show. But we did the Dallas the night before. You said, fuck it. And I think in the afternoon you tweeted out, hey, I'm going to do a free show at the Dallas Improv. Or I forgot which one it was, but it was Arlington. I forget which one. But it was the one where the stage was in that corner and they had all the margaritas with the beers in them.
Nice. That's Fort Worth.
Fort Worth. And that honestly,
Arlington. No, not Arlington. God, it's been so long. That's the Dallas Improv.
Dallas. Okay, yeah, it was Dallas. Because there's that one in the corner. It was out of control. People waited on a block all day to get tickets. I think you've been trying to figure out how to like get them their tickets so they can get the fuck home and not have to wait all day. Because 500 people got in line in like 10 seconds. And but it was a free show also. So not only were they lucky to even know that this is just a pop-up show and they're not paying and they got lucky enough to get tickets. It was one of the most, the roof, you could feel the vibration of this place. That was one of the crowds where that fucking crowd was just, it was too good to me, bro. You know, like they were getting too good to me, bro. And I didn't want to get off, but I was up there, dude. And on the setups, they were out of their minds. And I'm like, buddy, I just said, what's going on, guys? And it was, whoa. They had all the margaritas, the big fucking ones, like the 40-ouncers with the Coronas in them. And that was the first time I had ever seen that. And I was like, what's going on? They had they had mango margaritas with Blue Moon in them. Whole place was shit canned and it was an explosion of a night. That night was, that's the type of shit. Sometimes I wish there was a camera crew in there to catch those special moments that you almost can't even plan.
You know, it's hard to get an entire room to feel the way you want them to feel. You know, it's rare that you get 100% from the audience. You know, there's going to be somebody that didn't like a joke or didn't like, that was whatever. But that, like shows like that, an excess amount of just happy. Everybody's so happy and they're excited that they're there. And so the energy on those, it'd be awesome to be able to catch that like lightning in a bottle right there every night. But man, those shows were awesome. Anytime you got to do those.
Shit was electric.
They were just so happy and you could see it.
Yeah. Can you imagine like what those people were going through? Because to catch you at a free show there at their comedy, like people had to be losing their minds. And the race to get there, because there's only going to be so many tickets available, and to know that you got it. I mean, those people are just losing their minds. And that's what a cool thing for you to do, by the way. Clubs, as a former club owner, I can tell you, like that means the world to a club owner, right? Like you want to come here and do a free show in here and make 500 people lose their minds? Like that, because it helps them, right? With their reputation and all that. Like what a cool thing.
Yeah, especially they were running them tabs up that night. Everybody had a $400 tab at their table.
It was a lot of upside down beers.
I must have had at least four or five of them shits. I was hammered. Yeah, that bus life is so, it's almost hard to explain. People don't even like how awesome it was. I just, for a dude like me at that point where I was at, that was the most beautiful position. Like you roll around. And you every night's a different awesome crowd in a different city, at the beginning, I couldn't go up without four shots of tequila. Like people were pulling me aside, like, bro, Noe was like, bro, I used to do that too, bro, but it doesn't lead you down a good road. Like I was getting them talks because my anxiety was through the roof every night with 5,000 people.
And if you were getting that talk from Noe.
He has one of the craziest. I don't want to say it on here because it was illegal shit. And I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but that motherfucker did some of the craziest shits I ever heard when he went to Korea. That guy, of all guys, he's the most calm, cool, chill guy. But the stories he'll bust out when he was on that fucking yaks, wild, bro, blow your mind. But so you, what, after the specials filmed, you going right back out? You hitting what's the situation on the road right now? Two buses and an 18 wheeler?
Let me see. When everything stops, we had two buses and we had three trucks. One truck for merch, and then two trucks for production.
What a caravan that is. Three 18-wheelers and two tour buses, bro.
That's what I was telling people. It's like WWE meets the Food Network. It was it was awesome. It was the biggest tour. You know, it's the biggest tour we've done, and it just like, oh, really? Okay. Man. You know what's sad is that the name of my tour is called a God, what the name of the tour right now? the catch line is go big or go home. And I'm like, holy shit, I did this to myself.
Yeah. I mean, how much is your gas bill on that damn tour? Jesus Christ. I mean, man, that's got to be a hefty one. That's clearing a mill easy. Three 18-wheelers and two buses. Jesus Christ. How many cities already? I mean, obviously, it's going to be every city in the world that you want to go to.
The problem is that we had a lot of, you know, every entertainer out there that had shows booked, everything just got pushed back, mm-hmm. back, rescheduled. Nobody wanted to cancel because nobody wanted to, you know, lose out on potential money. But yeah, the calendar right now it's pushed, booked out until about 2023 before we have to put it on. We gotta make up all the dates.
Yeah. You too. You're booked till 2023 too. Thought it was just me. I do have Des Moines. Funny bone.
We're actually supposed to be in Europe right now, but you know, again, it's one of those. Next year, maybe.
You know what? I was so spoiled. The Australia thing. That's the one. Getting down there with them crazy ass boys. Oh, just hanging out in Milan and Seb. Oh. That's just random, by the way.
You know, it's crazy.
International travel. I just brought that up.
It's big of a pain in the ass how much it sucked for all of us that make our livings through entertainment. You kind of think, you know, like every now and then the universe is like, everybody needs to take a nap.
Well, all I know is I've never slept so much. man, I'm getting some Z's. I average probably 8 to 10 hours a night.
That's really nice.
Yes. That's good. You probably haven't done that in forever, right?
But look at his skin. He's got no bags. Guy's got tight skin. The dome's looking good. I mean, you're looking. Your skin is just tight.
No filter, people. No filter. all that sleep. All that. My dogs are having the greatest life right now. They're like, this is awesome. We're in bed all day, and then they wake up.
Yeah.
Of course, I got to jump in the car and go hit Starbucks. some habits don't change.
Maybe that was it. Maybe we just all needed the nap. We needed to get a lot more sleep, and now we're good.
I definitely feel like I've taken advantage of being home, getting myself better. I'm down almost 70 pounds, so that was a big one right there. Hey, water pills work wonders.
How many times you pissing a day on them things?
Oh, like, you got to time it. You got to time it just right because they will drain you. Take two pills and I'm going for at least 3 hours.
Nice. Well, you know, let's talk about Space Jam. What's we got? July 16th release date there. What's popping off? Is you the voice of Speedy Gonzalez?
Yes, I am the voice of Speedy Gonzalez. I am, I think, officially the first Mexican to play Speedy, which is hey. the voice by everybody but, you know?
Yeah.
And they almost took the part away from me. There was a writer in New York who had written a thing about, you know, Pepe Le Pew and Speedy Gonzalez. He put the two together and talked about how, you know, these two guys need to go away because they're bad images and stuff. And I kind of chimed in, and Warner Brothers liked that. So they were like, hey, thanks for defending the character. And, you know, so they're on board with helping to push the character more.
Okay.
Awesome, dude.
So, Pepe Le Pew's you won't see Pepe Le Pew in Space Jam.
He was canceled.
He's out.
He's a little gropey.
Yeah.
Now, whoever did his voiceover, do they still get paid, or how's that work? Is they still getting paid, right?
Well, I guarantee you, they still get paid. Yeah.
As soon as you sign that contract,
you know, whether you use it or not. The crazy part is that after he got, you know, canceled, I got more lines. but I didn't make extra money, so yeah, it goes both ways.
What a wild life. You're gonna be Speedy Gonzalez in the new Space Jam. God.
By the way, I loved your character in Narcos, dude. That yes. bomb shop scene, bro.
That's range right there. I can go from being a cartel, you know, cartel member with a shotgun yeah. to a mouse. That's, you know, both sides right there.
Oh shit! I always see how pumped up people are when you do your giveaways on Twitter, and you give away a ton of merch, and you're always just interacting and just giving back to the fans. In like a cool way. I mean, nobody, some people do giveaways here and there, but no one's on there just dishing it out. The Funkos have taken over.
Yeah. And people still get upset too. Cause something's just, you know, I'm, you know, how come you give to them and not to us? And how come it goes over here, but not over there, you know? So it's,
yeah, always going to be that person, right?
You know, no matter how much you do, people are still going to get upset and complain about it. But yeah, I put the Funkos out there. I was fortunate that, to build that relationship with that company and these little guys right here.
Yeah.
The Funko figures.
Nice.
You know, who knew how huge they were? I mean, I was already a fan of, I thought they were cool, but I had no idea of the pandemonium of craziness that comes along with it. I got to go to Comic-Con and I saw it's just like, you know, it's like, wow. People go insane for those. And those suckers on the black market, man, you know, upwards of what, Juan? What'd you see? Like 10,000? I think there's a Manny Pacquiao one that's gold that's autographed, and they want like 10 grand for it.
Wow.
Get that gold. You got the gold fluffy one?
Yeah, well, because I have Krylon, and so I kind of, you know. I made some rose gold ones. And I think they go for $19 on the black market. Get yours today.
You have, you know, I was lucky enough to, one of the other humongous perks that, you know, is not, that what people wouldn't look at it as like, you know, glitz and glamour. You know, being on stage was I got to, you know, you gave me a really, you just didn't hand it to me. Like, I was very lucky to get on the tour, but a lot of people, like, they assume that, oh, you just go on a tour, you just live in this lavish life and you didn't earn it or nothing. And, you know, you just got lucky, but you like, you made me work a lot. Like, I had such a good perspective of everything because you made me also work. Like, you know, you're like, all right, you're on the tour. You know, here's what you get paid. The first, you know, however long, I'll let you go up whenever you go up. And then, just help, and I helped with merch because that's how I started. When I would come hang out with Ivan, I used to love it because I bartended for so long, you know. And so, a lot of people don't understand this because they see a merch booth usually at a concert, and people all stand in a nice and organized line, and they all wait for their Def Leppard shirts, and I'm up next. But at your shows, it was like a fucking bar. It was like bartending. They all bum rush it, and it's like it's just like you're just grabbing cash, hitting shirts. I'm taking three orders at one time. All right, you want two extra large fluffy tour shirts. You want a bobblehead, a hat, fucking kid, a kid's beanie, and then you're just $85, buddy, and you're just running it right. And I had so much fun doing that, and then well, obviously,
I love that you'd be out there hustling, slinging, and then you're like, Ivan, I'll be right back. I'm gonna go do my set. And then you go up on stage, perform, and then come back and sell stuff. Weren't you just up on stage?
Because I used to at the beginning, I would want to change, I'd change and then go up there. And then after a while, I was like, who gives a fuck what I'm wearing? Like, I just was like, I had the merch on, you know, and I was selling the merch before the show. And then the first season of the tour that I was with you, I never knew I would only get the. It was like also a test every night because I never knew until about 5 minutes before the show started if I was going, and I, you know, there'd be the host and then I would go first. So I was always on edge, like, am I going up tonight? You know, I'm doing the shirts and I'm waiting for the call. And then, you know, we had a walkie talkie and then Ryan would be like, Ryan Latham, you're doing five, you know, and then Ryan, peace. And then I'd be on his own and shit. I'll be out there. I'll go do my 5 minutes and come back, dude. It was fucking awesome, man.
So how did you decide, Gabriel, who went up each night?
You know, it's just one of those, like, whatever I was feeling, you know.
Well, everybody else went up. When I was new, I was like the, you know, you ever watch, you know, any of these Sons of Anarchy or Mayans, mm-hmm. you know, you're the guy.
You're the prospect.
Yeah, you're the prospect.
I was a prospect. I was basically the first year I was a prospect, and then I got an audition for the next year on your first season of Stand Up Revolution. And then when I remember when you sent me the text after I did it, I had a really good audition. Like, I got lucky. I mean, I hit it nice. That Bray Improv just fucking boom. I hit it wonderfully. And then I remember the call you got and the text. I remember that one text like a few days later after the audition. And I saw your name pop up on my phone and I was like, oh, here we go. This is it. And it said, it was a joke where he's like, I really didn't like your set too much, but Comedy Central really enjoyed it. It looks like you're going to be on or something like that. And I was like, yeah. But I was still so like hesitant. Like even after we filmed it, after that amazing weekend of like, basically it was a comedy festival. All those seasons of Stand Up Revolution that we'd film at the at Stand Up Live. And then but that first one, I was so like, oh man, the universe is never this good. I was waiting to like say it's going to air. And then I was just like, Mike Britt from 1996 Comedy Central was going to take my spot. I just didn't say, I don't care until I see my mug up there. You just got to, that's how comedy makes you think after a while. You're like, you always know that this shit is just too good.
Is it real?
Something's going to go wrong here.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, when I did the Aloha Fluffy special, I had comedian G. Riley close out. Like, I always thought that was one of those specials where a lot of things happened that I felt like, yeah, no one's ever done this. Having another comedian close your special for you. Because I told this story about the racist gift basket.
That's right.
I don't even know what would happen if I told that story today. But telling a story about playing a practical joke on someone and then having the person who I played the practical joke on come out on stage and tell their side of what was happening and how they did it.
And it crushed.
It killed. It killed. And I thought that was awesome. And so it was supposed to air. And for whatever reason, they cut G. Riley off of the special.
See?
And I remember the night that we were all watching and mm-hmm. we're all excited. And he had called his whole family. Everybody's tuning in. Yeah. And no one told me that his thing got edited out. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God. And he goes like, you know what? And I told him, I go, I'm so sorry. I go, that wasn't supposed to happen. I go, you know, he goes, no, I should have known better than to get excited. And you know, why was this going to be any different? And I felt so terrible.
Oh, no.
I didn't know. And that's when I called my manager, Joe, and Joe got an earful because that was his responsibility. He knew he messed up. And fortunately, Comedy Central made it right. A couple weeks later, they made sure to play the entirety.
Oh, that's cool of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never know until you see it. Okay.
That's why. That's why I saw my name on there. I was like, okay, but I got to see it. But that was someone. And then I actually on that Hawaii special, I got to do some, I opened up for you on that one. I got to do a set on that special with that crowd and that background of that fucking electric ass room, man. I'll tell you what, people just don't know how electric Hawaii is. Like the crowds are just unbelievable.
You remember we had the guy that came out and blessed the show? He brought
Reno.
No, not Reno. Reno, the venue brought in somebody to bless the show.
Oh, afternoon.
Yeah, he came in with like leaves and like some mm-hmm. candles and they blessed the show.
I completely forgot about that. That was great. Yeah, that was our Thanksgiving. This is what we do every Thanksgiving. Todd, I think I've told you before, but in case I haven't said it on this podcast, every year for Thanksgiving, Gabe will just bring for all the married homies on the tour, all the production and management and stuff. They would bring their whole families, and then we would all go on a fucking monster team effort, and that was our Thanksgiving. And for Thanksgiving, we'd load up on a bus and go to a luau, Jermaine's Luau, which was unbelievable food, open bar drinks, fucking amazing fire show.
Nice.
Just luau dancers, pig in the dirt. They dig it out. But you know, the whole party is around it, just watching it. After you get your legs, take pictures of the most amazing sunset in history. You go dig the pig up. They start getting the meat, putting it out there. You're drinking these crazy ass rum drinks just with the perfect breeze and shit, man. Oh, I'm telling you what.
Every year we would do Thanksgiving in Hawaii. So that was my excuse to get away from family members here that I didn't want to hang out with.
Yeah, you brought your intermediate family. We went, dude.
I got to go to work. I can't.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
Sorry, guys.
Gonna have to have super Thanksgiving in Maui. So.
Oh, shit. How's the V-Dub Center doing there at your shop?
The V-Dub Center, yeah. I want to say if we're up to about 30.
30 V dub buses in there. Look at them. Look at that.
Nice.
Oh man.
Oh, I love it.
I saved the link the other day because it was too early in the morning for me to text it to you, and I forgot to send it to you because then you said you would come on the podcast, and I forgot everything else I was doing. But I got this one little baby one that looks so awesome. I got to send you the link. It's on Facebook. I saved it. But every time, that's like you've like rebranded V-Dub Bug in my skull.
Nice. well, Seinfeld became known for the Porsches, the Porsche collection, and I thought it was funny that Leno gave me shit for.
Yeah.
He goes, you have the same car over and over again. He goes, how boring. I go, no, because people are going to associate me with this car. I go, you why? You know, there's a method to it, and so that was the idea.
I love it.
You go with the how you do you have some of the more some of the more unique ones with all the windows like all the way to the top and all that shit?
No, yeah, they all got the 21 or 23 windows. The majority of them are 21 window buses.
Wow.
And then I got a couple actual bugs. You can't see them in the picture, but they're buried in there.
Do you want to do one that where the roof opens up in the back to like a bar top and we can have a griddle back there and it will just open up like a transformer to like a bar and you're in there and then you just fucking run in a taco spot with beers in it, dude. The whole car.
I've hired companies that have their own Volkswagen buses and they come out. One had a DJ booth in it and one was actually a bar. So nice.
That's great. Cool.
I'd rather just rent those. I don't need those. Yeah.
I want one so bad.
Well, they'll come out, but yeah, don't.
One of my new pipe dreams is to have a box truck, but the box truck, you know, it opens up to a stage, and then it also could be a bar. You know, you have the stage in there, but it opens up to a bar, and then you take the staging out across the way, and you just have your own comedy club wherever the hell you want at any time.
Yeah,
and
that would
bomb you. Pack it up and drive right the fuck. What'd you say?
I said that would have worked perfectly for this this past year, you know.
I know. Me and Todd rebuilt his home. We turned Todd's little shed barn into a bar. I'll send you the pictures. We built a straight up pub in Todd's backyard in Indiana.
It's amazing when you get bored enough, you know what you can get done. Like weird, it's like fuck it. You know what we should do? Turn that shed into a bar.
Yeah.
Three comedians out here for 16 days in a row. Just transforming a shed into the coolest fucking backyard bar in Indianapolis.
Hey, so you said you had a comedy club?
I had three. Well, I was partial owner of three. We had Morty's Comedy Joint in Indianapolis. It used to be Comedy Caravan in Louisville, and it is again now, but I think we called it the Laughing Devil when we had it. The Laughing Derby, yeah. And then Wiley's Comedy Club in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a brief run, 3 years, you know. It's a good way to exhaust your life savings.
oh, shit. Well, Fluff, man, we're so thankful that you took the time to come on here. You know, I'm so excited to see you back out there crushing it. There's a strong chance that I just set up shop, make
tacos. Where are you at? Because every time I talk to you, you live somewhere different. And by the way, Todd, there was a point in time when he literally lived on the bus.
Yeah,
he didn't have an actual address. His address was wherever the bus was going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I can see it. I mean, dude, he was like the road warrior when I first met him. You know what I mean? Then we became roommates for a year, and we lived right behind the comedy club in Indianapolis. But he was the road dog of all road dogs, man. Sleep in my car. He didn't give a shit. Drive 18 hours for $600. Like, I loved it. And I was wanting to be a full-time comedian then. I still had my regular job. So when I met Sean, it was like, oh, this is like real comedy, man. This is the dirt. This is the shit. So I loved getting to know that side of comedy because I didn't have a lot of friends that were road dogs like that then. And that's about the time that the clubs happen and stuff. So for me, you know, like learning as much as he learned from you about the business of comedy or whatever, I learned a lot about road dogging from Sean. Because when I met him, man, he was just, he didn't really have I didn't think you had a place. You were just on the road all the time.
Well, no, I didn't have a place for three or four, I'd say four of the years with Gabriel. And because we were never home. We left January 1st. We didn't get home until July 3rd. And then we were off for a month
on the road.
Yeah, no, when I went home, I would just stay with Ivan or Martin for the first couple years, because we were never there. And then we had a month home in July. We'd fuck off for a month. And then we were back out in August. That's when we do that run, you know, down the coast, starting in Boston, right into all the beach cities and shit, all those fun-ass outdoors shows. So, you know, and then when I got to Indy, though, I just had this, you know, I was with the Yoder booking and boom, I was just, they were just giving me everything. And I had to, you know, I had the Comedy Central credits and I was running my hour, my 45 was pretty good. So they were just throwing me everywhere. And I was like, bro, I'll take it all. Yeah. And I moved to Indy and that was it. And then we get that spot. But now, well, and I was in New York, obviously, the last time you were there. But I got rid of my apartment and then I live down here with my girlfriend now and my fiance. I'm engaged, Fluffy.
What?
Yeah. And, I live in New Jersey with my lady.
Okay. Yeah. You still got the grill?
I still got all, which way? Teeth or the or no, fire?
No, the fire.
I don't get rid of any of that. Anything cooking wise.
Yeah, the cattle grills that he was telling me about. And I'm like, oh, dude.
Yeah, that Traeger.
He's got the setup for sure.
But I will say, I did, I was at my mom's house last week. My mom moved back to Ohio. So I drove to go hang out and I smoked some brisket and ribs, but with where you babysit it all day with the coals, you know, you got a fire going over there, getting all your coals and you bring it over like natural smoke with just wood stuff. And that shit's way more work for the 9 hours. But I guess what? The flavor was tripled. No offense to Traeger. it's a great $2,000 machine, but the $90 fucking smoker that we used with 9 hours of work, it was just way more of an intense flavor. I mean, that was another amazing thing. We bum rushed barbecue spots throughout Texas.
Everywhere. Everybody's blood was 90% sodium.
we're talking like the barbecue spot they give it to you on paper, bro. You walk it over like,
yeah.
So many amazing barbecue places.
My favorite year of my life, I think just because of food, is when my parents moved to Texas, Longview, Texas, and it's East Texas. And I lived there for a year. I didn't have any friends because I didn't wear Wranglers and didn't wear, you know, Ropers. So nobody would talk to me. But the food was stupid. Like this, all the seafood and barbecue spots. There was a whole, you know, I'm going through Longview, Texas. Like every other shop is a barbecue spot. One of those, like, there wasn't even a table. You just get in there and you could stand on the counter. There might be four spots and just a wall full of beer. And then two dudes back here just cranking out meat.
And on that note, lunch, guys.
Lunch time. Hey, Gabe, man, thank you so much again. I'm so pumped for you to be back out in these streets, about ready to crush your special. We obviously know it's going to be unbelievable, not because we just expect it to be, because we know that you're still working as hard on this special as you did your first one. And I see your work ethic almost as much as anybody can say, I believe. And it's a goddamn honor, and I can't wait to see the product. And I'm coming to San Antonio, and I'm going to eat barbecue and sit in the back of the room and fucking die because I can't wait. It's going to be unbelievable.
Thank you, Sean. And it's been a pleasure, Todd.
Yeah, pleasure meeting you. Thanks for hanging out, man. It's awesome.
Thanks, Fluff. Appreciate you, Gabriel Iglesias, man. Gabriel Iglesias, let's go.
Hey.